Don't you know? We're talking about a revolution. Sounds don't you know?
It's LOA Today.
Talking about a revolution.
I'm Walt Keeson, your host, and this is a transition show that we're doing. This used to be the Freedom News Hour, and we have drawn that show to a close because my co-host, Bill Westmiller, has other commitments now. He can't do the show anymore. So it kind of gave us an opportunity. It gave me an opportunity to reassess and decide what did I want to do. We've been doing the Freedom News Hour for about 4.5 years now. And with the change, I thought, you know, this is a good opportunity because I've been getting kind of frustrated with the way the show had been going. I mean, whenever you talk about news, you're talking about very negative situations. And as a result, the conversation gets very, very negative. So I was tired of that. You know, negativity weighs on you after a while. And that's what I had been experiencing for quite some time. Bill and I had tried to mix things up and so forth, but it just really wasn't getting there. So I figured, okay, this is a good time. Let's see if we can switch things around. And I have a podcast I've been doing for a number of years off and on that I called LOA Today. And LOA Today is about the law of attraction. Now, for those of you who don't know the law of attraction, it's a concept that was popularized in a film that came out in 2006 called The Secret, which some of you may have heard of. It also ties back to a number of other writers and speakers over many decades. One of the more famous proponents of it would be Tony Robbins. Going back a few more years, it would be Norman Vincent Peale with The Power of Positive Thinking, Napoleon Hill with Think and Grow Rich. I mean, you can go way, way back in history and find proponents of the concept throughout the centuries. Very, very recently, it's been referred to as the law of attraction, and the concept of the law of attraction is actually quite simple. It's simply what you think about is what you tend to attract into your life, positive or negative. It doesn't matter which it is, which is kind of daunting when you think about it. Now, this is somewhat of what they call a woo-woo topic. It's a little bit out there, a little bit spiritualistic, a little bit new agey, and it might be a little bit strange to hear a self-professed libertarian describing himself as being into this, but it's true. That's where I come from, and that's what I'm interested in, and that's what I do. So I figured this is a good time. Let's see if we can tie in the concept of law of attraction to my philosophy of life and perhaps attack things from a more positive perspective. So that's what the show's about. Now, this is going to be a little bit of a transition show because obviously many of you have been listening to Freedom News Hour for quite some time, and so I want to kind of bring you over slowly, so to speak. So we're going to kind of get there slowly by talking about some of the issues we used to talk about on the Freedom News Hour, but this time, for this week only, we're going to talk about them from a more positive perspective. Now, the plan has been to include other people in this conversation. And we're trying to hook my sister-in-law in, Yoana June Teeson, because, first of all, she's also into LOA, and she's also a very positive person. I'm not sure if we got her on the line just yet. I'm not seeing any indicator that says that we do. So I'm going to try to kind of go it alone here for a few moments. Hopefully we'll be able to hook her in soon. In the meantime, I do have other people who are with me who might want to participate. If either of you are interested, feel free to come over. But my wife is here with me, Louise, and we also have a good friend, Ben McCarran, who is with us. She's also a strong proponent of the idea. So until we get Yoana on the line here, maybe we can tie them into. So I'm going to move the mic over here and get some more people involved here.
Hello.
Thank you for coming on with the program today, Louise.
Well, you're very welcome. I'm excited for this being your new format and the start of something I think that's going to be really exciting.
I think so, too. And Brenda, you want to step over and say hello at the mic?
Hello. I'm so excited as well to be here.
Excellent. Well, I gave kind of a quick overview of what LOA is, and I don't want to go into that in too much detail just yet because I want to touch on the news items first. In general, we tended on Freedom News Hour to talk about things related to monetary policy, related to foreign policy, wars in Iraq and all that kind of stuff, Obamacare, health care, all the stuff going on with the NSA and privacy issues. So I figured we could maybe go through those one at a time and just kind of attack it from a different perspective, because this is not, first of all, it's not a topic that most people feel confident talking about, and second of all, it's something we never hear talked about from a positive perspective, and that kind of makes this unique. So let's just start with something that's really negative, because I want to pull this from the deep negative over to the positive, okay? One of the most negative things going on right now is the war in Iraq, which was supposedly ending and supposedly over, and now all of a sudden it's not over. And in fact, there's now a new fundamentalist Islamic power that is trying to take over there and is wreaking all kinds of havoc, and revolution is in the air once again, and the country is basically in a schism, and there's all kinds of genocide going on. That's about as negative as you're going to get. So the question becomes, how on earth do we discuss that from a law of attraction perspective? And I think the answer to that has to start with, what are we going to focus on? Because as we all know, law of attraction, we hear, at least here in the studio, know law of attraction is about what you think about. The more that we think about all these negatives, about all these terrible things that are going on, we're going to continue to attract in all more negatives. We're going to help bring in more negatives to Iraq, last thing those people over there need. So how do we look at this from a positive perspective? Well, probably the first thing to do is to stop thinking about it in terms of war. We don't need to think in terms of war. We can think of this in a number of different ways. We can think of it in terms of the fact that there are people over there who are predominantly of Muslim faith, who have their own differences in belief, and they've had their own stuff going on. But ultimately, we can think of it just in terms of people, because in any war, the innocent, the civilians, the people who aren't really part of the fight, the ones who suffer the most, usually don't have all of the slogans and the driving passion to take power and all that kind of stuff. They're just trying to survive. We can focus on them. We can focus on their needs to just live their lives. And it doesn't matter what your religion is. It doesn't matter what your creed is, what your belief system is. Average people just want to live their lives in peace. So the first thing I think is we start thinking about it in terms of peace. And that's a big challenge for people. Here we have this huge topic. It's all about war. It's about terrorism. About this. No, it's about thinking about what peace would be like. So the first question I think becomes, what could peace look like in Iraq? What could that possibly be like? I would say probably the first part of peace for me is people feeling happy in their lives. Well, what makes people happy? If they have a strong economy, if things are going well economically, that's usually a form of peace. That's where a lot of peace comes from. Oh, I hear a voice. Yona, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am.
You're here. You made it. Hooray.
I did.
And we got Louise here. We've got our friend Brenda here. We're all starting to talk about, we were just starting to talk about what's going on in Iraq and trying to turn it into a conversation about peace.
Okay.
So I'm going to let them back up, and I'm going to let you come in just to give you an overview of what we've been talking to the audience about.
Yeah.
The whole concept here is to try to take the basic concepts that we've been discussing for all these years, that Bill and I have been discussing all these years on the Freedom News Hour, and turn them into a more positive context here on LOA Today. So
Right.
I was just describing to Brenda and Louise and to our audience, really the way to start thinking about the first issue, war in Iraq, is to stop thinking about it as a war in Iraq and start thinking about it in terms of a peaceful Iraq and trying to speculate what a peaceful Iraq would look like.
Yeah.
And so I began that speculation by suggesting that peace usually starts with having a healthy, vibrant economy, because when trade happens, that's when people are most peaceful. You don't really have a need to fight when you have healthy trade and healthy economics going on. And I would think that would probably be the first place to start. That's a big challenge for most people. Thinking about Iraq in terms of positivity, in terms of a peaceful situation, is a challenge. But I think that's where it really starts. I mean, does that make sense to you?
Oh, yeah. That makes a lot of sense.
So if I know this is kind of a stretch for you, because I know you don't think about violent situations at all, but you're aware of what's going on over there.
Oh,
you're
absolutely,
aware.
Yes.
You know, you can't hardly read a newspaper or read something online without hearing, oh, my goodness, there's the latest catastrophe or horrible situation that's happened over there.
So
go ahead.
Previously, I have been a bit of a news junkie, and so, I used to read every news item and follow all the details, but I'm trying to wean myself off of that because I realized that that energy was not good for me. So my effort has been focused on trying to find all the little positive in all of the bad news, you know. So I hear of the U.S. dropping food to the people who've been, you know, kind of sectioned off in the mountains. And, you know, that little bit of news I focus on and try to, you know, see more of that, find out more of that, hear about more of that, and learn more about that, as opposed to focusing on all the negatives, because that it wasn't good for me. So
that's one good thing that does happen, even in the worst situation, is that there's always at least some good being done somewhere. You just have to look for it. And there's an example of it. You found an excellent example. People trying to provide aid to the victims of the Holocaustic type of situation going on around them. But there it is. There's a good piece of good going on, and it's actually helping people.
Yeah, definitely.
That's a very encouraging thing. Another thing that I find encouraging is realizing just how impotent all the major players are in this thing. Even when you pay any attention to the negative side of it, the one theme that comes through over and over again is all the, you know, the war chants and, oh, we got to do this and, oh, we got to do that. And nobody ever actually does anything.
Right, yeah. That's true.
Which is probably just as well, because, you know, it's bad enough to be thinking about these things, but to actually do them makes it even worse. So there's a little bit of positivity in that, hey, at least they haven't turned it into an overt invasion. At least this is something where we can now say, hey, there's a chance that we can be thinking peace, even if they're not actually working peace.
Yeah, because it could be a lot worse than it actually is. So
it could. Yeah. Because of the way we originally had trouble getting you on there, I kind of had to change things around the way I wanted to do them. But let me kind of backtrack a little bit, because I wanted to give people a little bit about your background and the reason why I wanted to have you on the program.
Mm-hmm.
Besides being my sister-in-law, you also are a PhD candidate. And I have to admit, I don't know what the current discipline is, because you kind of changed it a little bit over time. What particularly are you going after right now for your PhD?
So right now my focus is on a combination of neuroscience and biostatistics. That's kind of my focus.
Neuroscience and biostatistics. Okay. Yeah. What exactly does that mean?
So my background graduate research has been in the area of neuroscience, but trying to understand how the brain and the nervous system works, and, you know, doing research on the neurons and the connections and the neurotransmitters and all the neurobiology that is involved in, you know, our responses and our cognition. But I wanted to move away from the wet science, the bench science, and get more into the analysis of the data kind of thing. And so that's why I've kind of shifted to biostatistics. But my biostatistics will be analyzing data from neuroscience research. So I'm still sticking with my field. I just won't be in the lab sacrificing the poor animals.
That's a good thing. We're very happy for the animals and for you on that.
Yes.
Now, of course, the question in many people's minds right now is, okay, what on earth does this have to do with the news or with LOA today? And that connection is kind of missing, so I got to fill in that blank right now.
Okay.
And the connection is, you've run into some really interesting pieces of information in the course of doing your research that tie in to the whole concept of law of attraction and to the concept of the role that we play in what we attract into our lives and what we do with our lives. And so I was hoping maybe I could get you to talk about some of the scientific basis that you've discovered, that you've studied it along the way that touches on this. For instance, I remember one time you and I had a conversation where you talked about the role that people's immediate emotional response to things has on what happens within their body and how that body reinforces what happens to them. Could you kind of talk? I'm kind of giving this a roundabout way, but I'm hoping you can give it the more direct scientific presentation.
Yes, I hope I recall exactly what you're referring to. But I have both professionally and personally done quite a bit of reading and research into neuroscience and just the way our brain and our minds work. And so one of the things that I've learned is in terms of when we have a particular emotion that is associated with certain chemicals being released in our bodies. Mm-hmm. And so when we feel, you know, sad or despondent or discouraged, there are specific chemicals that are being released from our brain that travels through our bodies and, you know, generates the actual physical feeling that we have. And it's, similarly, on the opposite side, when we have a happy, positive, you know, grateful feeling, there's also a chemical reaction. There are different chemicals that are being released in our bodies at the same time while we're having those feelings. And what has been interesting for me of late is the understanding that we have some control over that, you know. We can actually use our minds, as it were, to influence the chemicals that are flowing through our bodies. And so when we, on purpose, in spite of our surroundings, in spite of our situations, determine that we're going to try to have a positive outlook and a positive response to our lives, we're actually generating those positive neurotransmitters, those positive chemicals in our system. And not only do they are they helping us feel good, but they're actually making us healthier because our cells respond to them, our neurons respond to them, our hearts, our livers, everything, all our body structures respond to those beneficial chemicals, and it actually, for want of a better word, gives life to these to our cells, and it actually makes our cells healthier, helps them grow, helps them function more efficiently, and so we not only feel better on an emotional level, but we feel better on a physical level, and we're doing something good for our system. And so if we try to generate more of those emotions, we're actually making ourselves healthy and healthier. If we're doing the opposite, you know, spending too much time, you know, feeling sorry, feeling depressed, feeling sad, we're producing destructive chemicals, and those have, you know, very bad effects. They cause damage to our cells, and so that's what generates a lot of ill health and diseases. But we have some control over that. We can actually use our minds and our wills to generate those chemicals, and that's, you know, part of what I've been doing on a personal level to help me feel better. Because, you know, we tend to want to take drugs and, you know, supplements and exercise, and all those are good, but there are things that we can do that are more immediate that can actually also have the same response.
And that's,
I hope,
the key
that was
word.
What you were referring to.
It is, yeah. And the key word there is immediate, because there was one piece of that story that you told me the last time we talked about this that really caught my attention. Mm-hmm. And correct me if I'm not saying this right, okay? But mm-hmm. the way I understood it was, when we think about positive thoughts, within the course of just a few seconds, our neural system actually creates neural receptors to receive what?
So when we have these positive thoughts, our neurons release neurotransmitters. They release these chemicals almost immediately. And what happens is that those chemicals course through our body roughly for about 90 minutes.
Wow.
Sorry, 90 seconds. Sorry.
Oh, 90 seconds.
And every 90 seconds, we have the choice to decide what type of chemicals we want to be flowing through our bodies. And so when we feel bad for an hour, for a day, for a week, that's because we are every 90 seconds making that choice to reinitiate the flow of negative chemicals. But at the end of every 90 seconds, we can decide that, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to feel better. I want to think better. I want better chemicals flowing through my body, and we can make that happen on a conscious level.
That's really something. That means that every 90 seconds we can turn our life around.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's scientifically proven.
Yes, yes. There's research.
That's really wild. I mean, that's a lot to take in, the fact that all we have to do is change our thought process. go from either direction, from positive to negative or negative to positive, and in 90 seconds completely shift our biochemistry. That's the part that's really amazing. What happens when we shift our biochemistry? What are the physical processes that change when we go, say, from negative to positive? Oops, did we lose you? Uh-oh. I think we lost you on. We'll have to try to get her back on the line. Oh, dear, and we were at just a good part of the story, too, because this is the part where she would tell me, and I may not get this right because I'm not the scientist on this, she is, but she was explaining to me the last time that we talked about this that literally your neurons would create receptors based on the emotion that you're having so that you can receive more of the kinds of nutrients that are consistent with that emotion. And as she was saying earlier, those kinds of nutrients are the ones that are consistent with creating and continuing the ongoing feeling that's associated with it. So that it's a way of creating sort of a cascade effect. As you start to feel good, you continue to feel good. And by just staying on that track, you just continue on that
Hello?
Track to create a momentum. Oh, there you are. You're back.
Oh, sorry about that. I got a call and I didn't know what to do. So I had to get Mark.
My brother to the rescue. That's great.
Yes.
So what I was trying to ask you before you got knocked off by a caller was what's the actual chemical process that goes on when you go from negative to positive? What are the beneficiary stuff that happens?
So when you go from negative to positive, there's we actually have a structure in our brains, and it's called the hypothalamus, without getting too technical. And that's like a chemical factory in and of itself. And it produces different chemicals depending on what's happening to us, what we're feeling, what we're thinking at the time. And so when we're feeling stressed, that Molly's calling again. Hello?
Hello.
Okay. Sorry.
That's all right.
Yeah, so the hypothalamus is going to release certain chemicals. When we feel stressed, it releases cortisol and, you know, adrenaline and those types of chemicals. And that is what helps us to, you know, if we're in a dangerous situation, to respond rather quickly. But what happens is that a lot of times we feel stressed when there's no real threat. And so we continue to produce cortisol without needing to. And that cortisol, when it persists in our bodies over a long period of time, it starts destroying our cells and our organs. On the other hand, on the reverse, when we're feeling happy, we produce serotonin and all of the feel-good hormones and chemicals, and that's what helps us to feel good, to feel happy, to feel confident, to feel like, you know, we can handle things. And serotonin, those chemicals, our cells respond to them, and the cells then become more resilient, stronger, healthier, their function is improved. And so all of these things, and that's just one of the many feel-good hormones that are produced when we are feeling happy and positive about our lives.
And isn't there also a connection between experiencing the flow of those hormones and how our body produces actual nutrients, vitamins, minerals, and all that kind of thing?
Yes, definitely. Well, these hormones, they actually affect the function of our cells. And so we have cells that, you know, are responsible for example, the cells in the lining of our stomachs. And they can absorb nutrients from our food and then, you know, transfer that to other cells in our bodies. But when we are feeling nervous and tense, these cells can contract, and then they tend to seize up, and they don't function. They don't absorb the nutrients from our food, and so then there's no nutrients to pass along to our cells. And so sometimes we might be, you know, eating healthy and you know, taking all our vitamins and doing all the stuff we think we should be doing, but if our prevailing emotion is one of stress and negativity, then that those nutrients are not getting absorbed and assimilated into our body, and they're not getting used. And so we could be doing all the right things but not receiving the benefits of it because of the thoughts that are prevailing in our minds.
So it's not too much of a stretch of wording and of the imagination to say that we slowly starve ourselves to death when we focus on negative emotions.
Yes, definitely, definitely, yes. I love the way how you explain the science so succinctly.
Well, you have to have the knowledge first. You give me the knowledge, and I try to turn it into some plain English.
Yes, I try my best, but I realize I have a ways to go to do that.
Well, you do just fine. That's all right. So I take this concept, this whole idea of just what we do with nutrition and mm-hmm. how our minds affect nutrition, and I ask myself, what would happen in a place like Iraq if mm-hmm. we could somehow get in touch with people over there and help them get into a positive frame of mind, even despite all the craziness that's going on around them, still help them get into that positive frame of mind? One of the things that would happen is the problems of food that usually are associated with war would be much mm-hmm. less, wouldn't they? Because even with less food, you are getting more nutrients out of your food just by focusing on the positive.
Yes, yes, that is so true. And that's one of the things that I've been trying to do from my little corner of the world, is to, when I hear the stories, to not feel sorry, feel pity, feel any negative emotion, because I'm transferring that to them unwittingly, unwantingly, and try to, like you were saying earlier, picture them in better circumstances, under better conditions, because in doing so, I feel like I'm helping them, at least I'm helping me, not feel mm-hmm. badly. But
sure.
Yeah, that would definitely help them be able to then make the most of the very minimal amount of food that they actually are receiving. So, yeah.
Yeah, that makes a big difference when you're in that kind of a situation.
Yeah.
Another thought that comes to my mind, I remember reading, and I'm sure there are a number of stories like this, but I remember reading in particular one story of a group of, I'm going to say, perhaps 200 people in the Washington, D.C. area. They lived right in, either within the Beltway or very, very nearby, and they decided to do an experiment one day. They decided that they were going to try to influence the amount of crime that happens in D.C.
Yes.
And so in any major city, there's always a certain amount of crime that happens on a given weekday or a weekend day. I think this was a Saturday. And so there, mm-hmm. Statistically, there's a certain amount of crime that's going to happen. And they decided
yeah.
that they were going to focus that one day. I think they were doing it in terms of prayer, but it's really just any kind of focused energy. They were going to focus on just putting out their peaceful thoughts, thoughts of plenty and abundance and so on and so forth, and see if they could influence things. And
yeah.
so they all got together, not necessarily in the same location. In some cases, they were in the same location. In other cases, they were in different parts of the city. And they all, at the same particular time, I think it was an evening period, they decided to focus on that.
Yeah.
And then they checked the statistics later on and found that the crime for the city for that day was down something like 25% to 30%.
Yes, it actually worked. And I think that that whole experience has been repeated since then in other major cities across the country. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, and
yeah.
it has had the same effect, yeah.
It's really quite a remarkable thing, and it shows that this whole concept of what you think is what you attract isn't just a crazy woo-woo concept. It actually has some real physical, real-world application.
Yes, it does. And, you know, I Mark and I saw a movie a couple of nights ago, and it's called I, Origin, and they were talking about, it was a scientist who was researching the origin of the eye, you know. But in the movie, someone gave an illustration in terms of, they were talking more in terms of God and belief in God and you know, belief that there is no God. But I heard it, and it immediately connected with me as far as law of attraction is concerned, because he had these worms that he used in his research that they couldn't see. They were blind worms, basically. They lacked the ability to see. And one of the girls in the lab was saying to him, just as those worms can't see, they cannot, to them, light does not exist, but it does exist.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is having an impact in the world that they're living in, but because they can't see, it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And it's the same with the law of attraction. you know, there's some people who are unaware of it, and so for them, it quote-unquote doesn't exist. But that does not mean it isn't real and it isn't having an effect on their lives and the lives of the people around them. So I thought that was a great analogy.
Yeah, people like that actually just kind of live by default. They don't realize all the ways that,
yes,
that LOA is affecting them, so they just figure, oh, well, it's just, that's life, you know?
Right, exactly, yeah.
And by the way, no worms were harmed in the making of this story.
Right.
Listen, we got to take a break. After the break, let's talk about how this ties into some of the other issues, because I think we've kind of nailed the rock down pretty good, but this applies in other ways too, so we'll do that after the break. This is LOA Today on the Progressive Radio Network, and we'll be right back.
Wow.
We're back. Hey, Walt Teason, with Ioana June Teason, and we're talking about the impact that LOA and the law of attraction has on our everyday lives. We've been focusing the last few minutes on how it actually physically impacts our minds, and not just our minds, but our bodies, and how through that we can actually influence stuff going on around us. We touched a bit on how we can look at war-like situations in a completely different way that is not typical of the libertarian approach, but it's actually quite consistent, because libertarians basically believe in hands off. Well, what better way to take your hands off than to stop thinking about it entirely? And that's essentially what we do. We think about the good stuff instead of the bad stuff. Let's look at another topic on kind of the same wavelength. Big topic that has been going on for about the last year and a half has been the NSA, the Edward Snowden revelations about all the different ways that our government claimed that they weren't spying on us, that they aren't spying on us, they aren't collecting all this data on us, and, we are collecting all that data, and, we actually are storing all that data, but we're not looking at it. Yeah, right. Well, anyway, that's been quite a source for discussion, and it has actually expanded into other realms. Now there's the questions about what happens with security and privacy, where, you know, participation on Facebook and social media are concerned, and, you know, Google collecting data on us, and all the big data questions, and those have been kind of tied into this whole NSA thing, and it's gotten to the point where people don't feel like they have any privacy or anything remotely controllable by them anywhere left in their lives. So that leaves people kind of powerless, doesn't it? And that was one of the things that frustrated me about the old shows, about the Freedom News Hour, because we would talk about that, but we never actually got to, what can we do about it? How can we actually impact our own lives in a way that doesn't let NSA and security issues and anti-privacy and all that impact us? How do we get away from all that? Well, once again, I think it comes down to one thing, focusing on something else. Focusing our attention on where we do have control over our lives, and focusing on the way we don't want our lives to be. Because as you were pointing out, Ioana, the more that you focus on the positives, the more you impact your body positively. And as the studies we were talking about where people are trying to influence their own local regions show, it happens outside of our bodies too. So what can we focus on where security is concerned, where personal privacy is concerned? I don't know about you, but I can think of a few ways. Let me put out an idea or two and see if you have any. One idea that occurs to me is, well, you don't have to participate in social media as much, do you?
Right.
This is a voluntary thing, folks. It's not like somebody's holding a gun to your head saying, go do Facebook.
Right.
So that's one way to do it. Second way to do it is, that's still a little bit on the negative side because we're trying to avoid. How about the positive side? How about the ways that, despite the fact that the government's collecting all this data and the you know, big data people are collecting all this data, the only thing they know about is what we put out there. The stuff that we keep to ourselves, whether it be through social media or anything else, stays with ourselves. And indeed, mm-hmm. most communication today, despite what you might think, still happens interpersonally in non-internet time. One of the things that I noticed recently in a marketing survey that I read, I'm a marketing person, so I read a lot of these marketing surveys. This particular survey was trying to identify how often people take their referral cues from their friends on Facebook or on Twitter or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, that's the big thing that marketers are all interested in. They want to see, you know, can we influence the friends of friends and so forth. It turns out that the percentage of people who actually pass along those kinds of referrals, 7%.
Oh, really?
A whole lot smaller than you would have thought of. As it turns yeah. out, most referrals still happen verbally.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So automatically, people are just already doing things to keep things private. They're just talking among themselves, which the NSA mm-hmm. can't track online.
Right.
So there's a positive way to look at it.
Definitely. I've always, my attitude has always been that I assumed that if I put something on the Internet that somewhere, somehow, somebody has access to it. It's always been my working assumption. But I try to focus on all the good things that, you know, it has brought to my life. And, you know, being someone who's not originally from this country and my family still lives in Trinidad, you know, the Internet has been amazing for me because when I first came here some 20 years ago, I had to wait on a monthly call at a payphone with a, you know, a card with a number, and then the operator would come on and say, you have 5 more minutes. And now I can Skype them as long as I want, and I can actually see them while I talk to them. So I try to focus on them.
By the way, doing it through Skype, it frustrates the heck out of the NSA. They're furious because they don't have as much access to data. They've actually been making an issue about that. So
really?
But then by staying on Skype, you're actually frustrating all those powers of
people. Well, that's good to know. So I try to focus on the good things that the internet and the technology has brought to my life, and not so, you know, I think I try not to let the news of all the leaks of data and all that kind of stuff make me scared or worried, which I think is what happens to a lot of people, because I feel like, you know, ultimately I'm still in control of me, regardless of what information the government may collect, you know, control of my life in terms of my attitude, my approach, how I feel about things, and how I go about, you know, living my life, you know, because I think about, and I just forgot his name, the psychologist who survived the Holocaust.
Oh, yeah. I know who you mean, but I can't think of it.
Yes, and so he... Viktor Frankl, yes.
Frankl, yes, that's it.
Yes, and he, you know, he maintained that even when he was a prisoner, that he wasn't a prisoner. So regardless of what the government may know about me, I'm still in control of me. So that's how I try to look at that.
You also mentioned a word that I think is really apropos here, and that word is fear, being scared. Which, of course, is ultimately what all this government secrecy, security is all about, and keeping us in fear so that, you know, we stay in control, under their control, and so on.
Exactly.
And I'm thinking back to what you talked about just before the break, about the role that fear plays in our own minds, on our own bodies. All the ways that fear basically inhibits us. That's how they manage to do it. That's how they manage to maintain their control. They count on that fact. What happens when we turn that around? What happens when we refuse to be afraid? You said you chose not to be afraid. You chose not to focus on the fear anymore. You just frustrated the government. How dare you?
Exactly. because when you are subject to that kind of control, you know, every time they put out some kind of news about something, you are scared, regardless whether it's the leak of the data or any other kind of news. People respond with fear. That's their go-to response, as it were, for almost everything, without realizing just how damaging that is to their body. And so when you think in terms of how worried people are about the healthcare system and their health and the long-term health and how they're going to pay for all of that, without realizing that the most important thing that they can do for themselves and for their health is to actually not be afraid.
In fact, you mentioned healthcare. That's one of the few things that they've actually named appropriately from an LOA perspective, because really the rest of healthcare is all about disease. About managing disease.
Yeah, it is.
Which, of course, is the worst thing you can do, because then you're right back into that fear motif once again. So both from the political perspective and from the medical perspective, you're actually better off not focusing on either perspective.
Exactly.
Which is really wild. It's a completely different concept. It's one that we're not used to having. But just imagine what would happen if we actually managed to, you know, get a whole bunch of people around the country to join us in refusing to fall into the traps.
To the fat trap of fear.
Refusing to fall into those mental traps of being afraid. And that you to be happy, to laugh, to have joy, to ignore, to just do all the things that absolutely frustrate the heck out of politicians.
Yes,
but make us all a lot healthier.
Right. There will be no control. They won't be able to control us, and then we won't be so desperate about our health and what's going to happen when we get older, and all those things just won't have the influence, the power that they have over us that they do now. And it's very, very liberating. I can tell.
I wonder how much disease we would actually wipe out by not focusing on disease.
Oh, my goodness. Let me tell you, the statistics on that are crazy, because there are quite a number of research that has shown that some 80 to 90% of all physical disease and ailments actually have their basis in stress. And
wow.
Underlying that stress is fear of some kind or another.
That really tells it, doesn't it? And it makes sense, because anytime we've talked to a doctor or some medical person, you know, about what are the symptoms associated with such a condition or such a disease, you know, stress is always on the list. We never really noticed that, the correlation, but there it is. Stress is always on the
list. Absolutely. And what happens is the focus has been treating the symptoms, you know, the disease manifests, whatever that is, whether it's heart disease or high blood pressure or cancer, but it's almost like, you know, playing that game when you pound the head of the animal back down into the thing. What is that game called?
Yeah, whack-a-mole, yeah.
Whack-a-mole, exactly. So they give a drug and they get the blood pressure down, but the underlying cause, the stress, is still there, so then it's going to show up in something else, and then there's going to be heart disease or diabetes or something else popping up, because the real cause of the disease is not dealt with, so... Yeah, if we could get
people
focused on happy feelings, it would almost eliminate the need for the medical profession, so they don't want that.
it almost sounds like a science fiction TV show from the 60s or something, doesn't it?
Where right,
you have this entire population that absolutely refuses to be fearful, and you know, the powers that be trying frantically to figure out some way to scare them back under control.
Exactly. That is exactly what would happen.
Can you also imagine what would happen to the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, and the statistics that they keep? If the majority of the population decided to adopt a philosophy of "I'm not going to worry, I'm going to be happy," you know, to just take it right from the song, "Don't worry, be happy." What would happen to those statistics, do you think?
Oh my goodness, they would be drastically different, drastically different. And I think even right now, the CDC is aware of that. I mean, there has been, because there has been a movement, not a large enough one, but a movement in the field of medicine and medical research to now incorporate some what they call alternative-type treatment, which deals with the mind. So they have, for cancer patients, they have groups where they come and they talk and they share. So they're trying to focus more on the cognitive aspect that the patient needs, as opposed to just dealing with the physical and giving medication, because the research that they have done already has shown just how powerful that is. I mean, just to give one example, there was a couple of years ago, maybe two or three, where there was an article in Times Magazine where the CDC had done research on the effect of prayer on people, hospitalized patients, you know, and they showed that the people who had family members, friends, you know, whatever, praying for them had a much shorter time of illness, much quicker recovery, or were less likely to relapse into the disease, you know, and this was purely objective. They didn't, you know, try to figure out whether the person believed it or not, but just the fact that someone prayed for them, just that research showed that. And, you know, they've done other research in terms of they know that people who are happier live longer. Research has shown that. People who meditate are healthier. So they know, they are aware of the fact that these positive emotions actually
have a beneficial impact on the health of the society. And so.
And meanwhile, the pharmaceuticals are trying to figure out how to put this into a pill so they can make $1,000 a pill on it. And they can't figure out a way to do it.
Exactly. They cannot. So they want to actually suppress that information.
That puts the FDA in kind of a difficult position, doesn't it? Because on the one hand, it's part of the government that the CDC is part of, and the CDC is producing this information. And on the other hand, they got the pharmaceuticals saying, hey, we got to produce our medicines here so we can have this monopoly on health care.
Right.
That's a tough position for them to be in.
It is. It is.
But I don't feel too bad for them.
No, I don't either. I think one of the main issues is that, in spite of... So that knowledge is not as widely disseminated as it should be, but even the people who are aware of it, it's hard to put in practice. And I can even speak from personal experience. I know all these things, and yet because of, the way I was raised, the predominance of my thoughts for the last 40-plus years and all that other stuff, you tend to find yourself falling into these old patterns. And so it becomes a challenge to overcome that, and you really have to make a deliberate daily effort to take charge of your life and to take charge of your health and actually put the steps in place to ensure that you're actually getting healthier every day and you're not succumbing to, what would be, quote-unquote, your natural tendency.
Natural tendency. That's something that's almost unfamiliar to us these days.
Fortunately,
there are people who are starting to realize just how important it is to tap into, be in touch with what is the natural tendency, what's really natural, not what we're taught by the power to be, but what's the real thing. And I'm glad that that's happening. I'm glad that that process has been going on and appears to be accelerating. Is that what you see from the scientific perspective, too?
Yes, more and more people are becoming aware that, there's something outside of the science that we can measure. They're realizing that there's more to it, and especially in the field of neuroscience, because they looked at the brain from every angle. They've cut it up. They've dissected it. They've looked it through microscopes, electron microscopes. And they still don't understand the mind, and they realize that there is something other than the physical part of the brain. And so there's this powerful consciousness that they can't understand, but they know that it does have an effect. It does affect you. It affects the people around you. It affects your life, your circumstances. And so that they cannot deny. The evidence is too overwhelming.
Oh, that's got to upset the data. I mean, that's got to really upset your data if you're a scientist.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, so then they try to, focus elsewhere.
So I have to ask you, does this drive their stress levels up?
Yeah, probably. Those who, need a promotion or funding or something.
Mm-hmm. So our advice to them would be what? Don't worry, be happy?
Don't worry, be happy. That's right.
Your data doesn't add up just right. Don't worry. Be happy.
Some of them are actually adopting that, but not as many as should be.
Well, the nice thing is reality has a way of pushing them in the direction they don't want to go to anyway.
Yep. Yeah, that's right.
Listen, we've talked about, we touched on healthcare, and obviously that's one of the things that has been a big issue. And one of the things that has been one of our big topics here on the earlier show, the previous show, the Freedom News Hour that ended last week, was monetary policy. Now, I know for a fact you know absolutely nothing about monetary policy. Most people don't, including many of our listeners, by the way, even though they listened to us for 4.5 years, in part because monetary policy is very, very, very hard to understand.
Yeah.
But I'm going to simplify it really, really, really really simplified for just a moment here. I'm going to make it in overly simplified fashion just to make a point. The overly simplified thing to say is if we had a level steady money supply that never changed, we'd have a much healthier economy.
Mm-hmm.
So the thought that I want to put out there where monetary policy is concerned is just one thing. Think that the money supply is level and steady. And that as a result, we have a happy, healthy economy with lots of jobs, low to no, actually no inflation, because there's no inflation when you don't have the money supply increasing. So essentially, you have the ability to save money. You can put the money aside for the future. It doesn't lose its value. It actually can increase in value over time. So you don't have to be good at investing in the stock market in order to save for your retirement. You can just put it aside. Simple.
Now I know how people feel when I talk about neuroscience.
Hey, I gave it my best shot. What do you want?
No, I understand. It's not that I don't. It's just that it sounds too good to be true, or, you know, something along those lines. People look at me like, oh, no, it can't be that simple, can it?
It does sound too good to be true, and for very good reason. All of our, quote, experts, unquote, tell us that it can't work.
Right. Yes.
That, you know, and we believe our experts.
That's what happens. Yeah.
Because our experts are never wrong.
Of course.
Except when they are. But, that's what it is. We are so inundated with this idea that you have to expand the economy in order to have a healthy economy.
Right,
that,
yeah.
You know, anything that is suggested to the contrary seems impossible. And we do have this overwhelming body of evidence that tells us through experience that every time they expand the economy, we end up with a recession.
Mm.
After a while, you say, wait a minute, is there a correlation there?
Right, that people don't even make. And I have to go back to the whole idea of neuroscience and law of attraction, because people have this idea that if I think really hard and I work hard and I worry about it and I plan and I stress, I should succeed. And yet that doesn't happen. But they never stop to think, maybe that's the wrong approach to the whole thing. And so it's very similar to what is happening with the monetary situation.
So what is the right approach then?
The right approach is to not worry, not stress, to actually be happy, going back to the song, and to imagine yourself in a place of success, to approach it as with a confidence, with a kind of a feeling that, yes, this can happen to me, that I am worthy of this, that I deserve this, that this is possible. And from that, you go forward taking the steps, taking the actions that are going to bring you closer to success.
Very well said.
Yeah.
That really sums it up in a nutshell. And yes, that's exactly what it is. I mean, sure, sometimes we have to start from a position, because we're in such a difficult place anyway, we have to start from a position of fake it until you make it.
Right.
The trick is not to get stuck there.
Yes,
you can't just
exactly
get stuck in fake it mode. You have to use it as a way to get you to yourself in the mode where you actually are convincing yourself, yes,
it's
things
a step
are
towards,
getting
yeah
better. I am in a good place. I can attract. I am a good person. I'm deserving.
Yes.
I actually deserve to have these good things happen to me.
Yep.
And in a world where we're taught so many different ways, so many subtle ways that our self-esteem should be as low as possible, that can be quite a challenge. That can be a huge challenge.
It can be a challenge. And what I've been doing is I'm using a lot of different things, but one of the things that has been working for me is the affirmations. I try to repeat affirmations to myself when the doubts creep in, when I want to go back to my old tendencies and my old thought patterns and stuff. I repeat affirmations, and I don't just say them verbally. I try to visualize them. I try to experience them. I try to feel them in my heart, use my emotions, not just my mouth or my mind, to get into the place of that emotion or that situation or whatever it is that I'm trying to create. And I try to do that as often as I can, so that I'm trying to basically reprogram myself or program out the negative and replace it with the positive.
That can be quite difficult in its own right. I mean, I know when you first start off doing something like this, I ran into this for quite some time. It was amazing how easily I was defeated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could try to do an affirmation. I could try to do something along the lines you were describing, and within seconds, I was defeated. And within seconds, I had just fallen right back into the old negative mindset. It was like there was this magnet dragging me over there or something.
Right, and that's where my neuroscience background helped me, because I knew that there were patterns in my brain, physical structural patterns that my neurons had formed over the last 40 years that I was trying to undo and to form new patterns. So I then tried to visualize those neurons making new connections. And, of course, you know, they're wanting to go back to the old connections because that's what's comfortable, that's what's
familiar.
Established, that's familiar, exactly. And so I would try to, you know, even if it's
for a second every time. I would try to get that new connection made and happening. And, you know, neurons are trainable like everything else. And so you have to be consistent and be persistent in making that effort to go there. It doesn't happen overnight, but it is possible.
It's also reassuring to know what we talked about at the very beginning of our conversation, which is that we can change our body chemistry every 90
yes.
seconds.
Right.
So even though we have this track record of falling off, failing, you know, start to feel positive, fell back into the negative again, mm-hmm. we still have an opportunity every 90 seconds.
Yes, every 90 seconds.
The opportunity never go away.
That's right.
So throughout our day, how many times do we have 90 seconds in a day? It's
on
the order of like 60,000 of them or something like that.
Probably, yep.
50,000 to 60,000 times. We have 50,000 to 60,000 times a day that we have an opportunity to change our mindset. That's
yes.
pretty cool. That gives us hope. That gives us the possibility. So, anyway, we're unfortunately near the end of the hour, but I want to thank you for joining me on the program. I actually also want to invite you to come back on a regular basis if you're interested and willing. So give some thought to that, okay?
I would love to.
Well, then I'd love to have you. That would be great.
Thank you.
And we're going to have some guests on over time.
Okay.
I'm going to contact people who I've previously interviewed through the podcast, and we're going to bring in some new guests as well. And if you think of anybody you'd like to interview, by all means, bring them up, and we're going to have some fun going forward.
Yes, we will. I've enjoyed myself. Thank you so much.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you for joining me, Ioana.
Okay.
And we'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Where are people going to rise up and take what's there?